You're listening to Higher Ed Social, episode 49. I'm Logan.
I'm Jackie. And this week we talked with Jim Sargent, who is the Assistant Director of Admissions and also the Coordinator of Transfer Admissions over at Trinity. Jim actually just recently started in this role, but he's been at Trinity for a while. And he actually came out of communications. So that was pretty cool to talk about, you know, transitioning inside of the same institution. And because Jim works with transfer students, we actually talk a lot about their needs and, you know, what kind of people they are. Full disclosure, there are a lot of different types of people. And so we talk about how they actually differ from first-year students.
And then we kind of have to force tangent ourselves because we actually talk about work for a good chunk of the podcast. So we end up talking about space operas, Pokemon, podcasts, and rom-coms. But then we get back on track and Jim explains Trinity's new announcement becoming test optional. We hope you enjoy this episode of Higher Ed Social. If you can believe it. But now I've hit record.
It's Monday. I'm not supposed to say that. Welcome to the show.
Yes.
All right.
How are you guys? What's going on? Logan, I saw your Facebook status and it was warmer in Albany, New York than it was in Tennessee today.
Yeah, today's been an interesting day.
It was warm.
Got to take a frozen fountain picture. So that was fun.
It was below freezing. Things happen.
Yep.
I know that's new to you in Nashville.
No, actually, we're about a week late. Usually, it's the first day of school that I take the frozen fountain picture because it's usually like 6 degrees. But it was like in the 50s and 60s last week. So,
your students are already back on campus?
Yeah, they've been back on campus since the 6th. Wow. The 6th was the first day of classes.
Whoa. Are your students back, James?
No, they come back class starts on the 25th.
Yeah, so. Us too. I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what we think about.
Yeah, our semester starts early because we have a Maymester that starts the first week of May, where it's mostly study abroad stuff, but it's a lot of fun. It allows us to also have summer classes and Maymester at the same time. I mean, not at the same time, but students can come back and do summer classes as well.
How is Maymester only in May? This is maybe silly.
Yes.
We didn't have Maymesters. I've never heard of a Maymester. That's interesting.
It's pretty neat.
I guess that's good, though. That's nice for students that just want to, like, quickly get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, we have, like I said, a lot of it's study abroad, so.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really fun. We do a big social media thing called Belmont to Anywhere, and we have little like signs that pull out that students can put in their bags and easily carry around with them that have a hashtag on them, and they take photos and selfies with it while they're studying abroad, and then we put it on a nice tag board and share it with everybody.
Cute.
Yeah.
How long have you done that?
Last year was our second year, so this year will be our third.
Map.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. Thanks for tweeting us and asking to be on the show. We're so excited.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Logan, James listens to the show.
I've been listening since, I suppose, episode 0, episode 1.
That's awesome.
A year ago.
Oh, my God. That's it. Yeah. Like you and my mom. That's amazing. Oh my God.
Thanks. And she hasn't been on yet, has she?
No, she's been dying to be on the show. So every time I go home to visit, she asks if she can be on the show. So maybe we'll do a special episode with my mom. I don't know how well that would go.
Well, your sister's been on the show, so.
That is true, for a brief moment, and hopefully soon. Actually, my sister is interested in admissions, so. You know,
all right,
we'll connect the two of you.
It is a
great. She just got her master's, so she's slowly job hunting because she's still getting like certifications or something. So she finishes this May. And okay, great. She'll be job hunting. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to my mom and the rest of our three listeners?
My name is James Sargent, and I am the Assistant Director of Admissions and Coordinator of Transfer Admissions at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut.
Fun. How long have you been there?
I have been at Trinity for approaching 3 years. I've been in admissions for about 6 months. I was in our communications office for 2 years before that.
Oh, that's cool. So you moved around?
Yeah. By choice. Okay. I was in our communications office as a communications associate, doing a lot of media relations, primarily writing the stories that would go up on our homepage and social media channels. And then we hired a new vice president and dean of admissions, and I was reading a few of his op-eds that he had written in the years prior and said, oh, this work sounds fascinating, and I think I'd like to do it. And so he started, and there was an opening, and I said, I would like to move over to admissions, and it's been fantastic.
Cool. That's really awesome. Are you from that area? Like, how did you get to Trinity?
I worked in city government in Hartford before I was at Trinity. And the thing I enjoyed the most was the communications work, the media relations work, and I left City Hall to join the team at Trinity. Really kind of looking at it from the perspective of what's the best thing I can do to boost up my city. And for me, that's through now in admissions, attracting students to Hartford. But really, it was about that urban engagement component to what we do at Trinity.
That's really, really cool. That's awesome. So how do you, I mean, Logan was in admissions. I don't have any admissions experience, so I feel like Logan's going to just keep comparing notes with you about your admissions experience. Do you are you a traveling person? Do you travel to all the schools?
I do, and
what
I
is
love
your,
it.
What do they call it, territory?
My territory is Northern California, the Pacific Northwest, Canada, and New Haven County in Connecticut.
Oh, that's nice.
So which is, like, yeah, not bad at all.
Yeah, not too much. That's cool that you go up to Canada. That's neat.
Yeah, I get to go to some of the coolest cities on the planet, in San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. I mean, really, it's awesome. And
that's so fun. Is there anyone's territory that you're specifically envious of? Like, oh, I wish I had that territory.
No. Not at all.
Nope, I got the best one. So how many counselors are on your team?
About a dozen.
Oh, that's cool.
Including the dean, the director, there's about a dozen of us.
Oh, that's not bad at all then. So you have that makes sense. So you have like only a few places that you're traveling instead of like...
Right.
I travel in the entire Eastern time zone, actually.
Right. And I coordinate all the transfer admissions as well. So that's in addition to those are my first year territories, but for transfer admissions, I've got the whole thing.
That's its own beast.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, at Trinity, do they have any specific like orientation for transfer students? Is there anything kind of not special, but how does that work? Anything?
We do have a transfer orientation. Been working on planning that recently, actually, for our incoming January transfers. But I think the rule with transfers is that there is no rule. They come from so many different backgrounds, so many different kinds of institutions. They're transferring for all different reasons, and so having that flexibility with them is really what makes transfer admissions successful.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Transfer students are so interesting because they're not, sometimes they get treated like first year students and it's like,
they're not.
Like,
they definitely have different needs, especially financial needs, because they don't always get scholarships to the school that they go to, their second school. And they also have different needs as far as housing and things like that. So they, you know, come in their junior year, so they don't want to stay on campus. They want to live off campus and all that kind of interesting stuff. I mean, from a social media standpoint, we create Facebook groups specifically for transfer students, mm-hmm. that they can join. They're also free to join any of the other class of groups, but because obviously they're going to have different class ofs that they're going to be a part of, depending on the student. But we like to give them their own Facebook group because they like to talk about transfer-related things, stuff related to, you know, what classes are transferring over for you, and, you know, I'm looking for a roommate, and all that kind of fun stuff. So they're definitely an interesting, they're smaller groups for us, but they're definitely just as lively, just in a different kind of way.
Absolutely, and they know what they're looking for very specifically, where a first-year student may not, because they've been somewhere and maybe some things went well and some things didn't, and they can articulate that in
and
a,
usually
in
they're
a really
transferring
clear
way. To your school for a very specific thing. There aren't that many undeclared students. So I've always found transfers to be very cool and fascinating. I know my wife, who works in admissions, has done a lot of work with transfers when she was in our nursing program, because we had a lot of students transfer to our program from other schools. So that's fun and cool.
Did you go to school at Trinity? Or no, it doesn't sound like you did.
I didn't. I went to Northeastern.
Oh, cool, cool. Where are you from originally?
I'm from the Hartford area.
Oh, nice. Do you like...
So
like,
I grew up here.
Do you like being in the same area that you, like, grew up?
I didn't grow up in the city of Hartford, and really that's, you know, that's what drew me back here, was to be in Hartford proper. And it is one of those cities that is, I would say, up and coming, and certainly had its struggles. As I remember growing up in Hartford, was you just didn't go there. There were very few reasons to go there outside of the Whalers, and we know what happened to them. So, So really, to be a part of a city that is taking off again and is really becoming an exciting place to live has been great. And I think it's one of the things that attracts students to Trinity as well.
It's really cool. I've actually never seen Trinity's campus. I feel like I have to go stalk it.
Oh, it's beautiful. You absolutely should.
I feel like it has to be.
Jackie likes to stalk things.
I can't say, like, I went to Geneseo because it was pretty, but, like, Geneseo, part of the reason why I really liked Geneseo and ultimately chose it was because I really liked the feeling that I got on the campus. It was very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a bit important part sometimes. Like, I'm not very much a city person. Like, I couldn't, like, do a big city. So any school like that was pretty much out for me. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about Trinity is that it is, you know, I'm going into my admissions pitch now with
do
you.
Do it.
Hey, that's what you should do.
We probably have.
But you really do get the best of both worlds. It has this small, it feels like a small liberal arts college because it is one. Mm-hmm. And it has this old Gothic, beautiful architecture. But you go across the street and you're in a real urban area. But it's still a small city of about 125,000 people. So it has the amenities of a major city in this smaller package that works really well for students.
Yeah, we're very similar to you in a lot of ways because we're an urban campus as well. Have a great view of the skyline from Belmont because Belmont's up on a hill. So you can actually see all the skyscrapers and all that kind of awesome stuff. But, you know, we're not, we're, I guess, mid-sized, with 7,400 students. So, but we still have that kind of small, like, college feel, I'd say, because our campus is only like 75 acres. So it's, you know, still small area wise. But you know, you're just two blocks away from, you know, hip and cool places to eat. And I mean, right across the street, we have some, you know, a great coffee shop and a few great places to eat, really good international market to get, lots of different foods from different places. It's just a well-placed kind of thing that kind of just grew up, around the university. Plus, you know, we have Vanderbilt right next door, like on the corner. So, there's that.
Yeah, you guys are really close. Do you have overlapping buildings? Because that would be weird. Like Vanderbilt and Belmont?
No, they're literally like on the corner. And we're on the corner, so we don't have any overlap at all. But it's you just walk two blocks on Wedgwood and you're on Vanderbilt's campus.
Wow.
Wedgwood is like the road that the two are both on. We're on the south end and they're on the north end. Or on the north side of the street and we're on the south side of the street. So, and Music Row, which is where all the country music is made, is kind of like in between us.
So, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
That's cool.
It's well placed for Belmont because we're a big music business school, so we have all of the music industry like up the street.
Oh yeah,
like there's literally within walking distance. We have the Oceanway Studios, which is one of our studios that actually is used by famous people like Keith Urban, and I think it's Keith Urban. I could be wrong on that, but I know that Matchbox 20 played there, and Taylor Swift has recorded some stuff, and pieces of who's that Canadian singer that sang the Complicated song?
Justin Bieber? Avril Lavigne?
Avril Lavigne.
Yes, that one.
Oh, my God. You're clearly not a 90s child.
Well, I remember. I forgot her name. I remember the song.
One time I went to a
concert. I don't think that was 90s at all, was it?
No, it's early 2000s.
Early 2000s, but
But recently, it's like one of the only studios in Nashville that can like fit an entire orchestra because it's made from an old church. So lately, they've been making or recording soundtracks for video games. Several of them pretty famous, like Dragon Age won some awards. It's a pretty well known game, Dragon Age Inquisition. No.
Sorry.
Yep. Anyway, if you know,
I can pretend to know.
I think The Last of Us was recorded there too, but if it wasn't, I'll cut that out.
Know what you're talking about?
They're very famous video games.
Got it.
Yes.
How about that Sonic the Hedgehog?
I love Sonic. He's so great.
Yep.
I used to play Pokemon. I still have my Pokemon cards in my trunk. True fact about
me. True fact.
Just in case I run into a trainer, I have nothing with me. Were you a Pokemon person? You weren't? What were you doing in the 90s?
In the 90s, I mean, I think I'm well older than you. I've listened
to this. This is my favorite game to play. This is my favorite game. We can play another round. What were you doing in 1998? That was like Pokemon time.
Seventh grade, what was I doing?
Could have totally been playing Pokemon.
Wow.
Did Pokemon exist at that point?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it existed in the late 90s.
Yeah, it started, it was on the Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, I guess I just avoided it.
Man.
Yeah, well, Pokemon's been around a while.
Now I want to look it up.
I don't even
know how to search what I want to search for. I just wanted to search, when was Pokemon a thing?
When was it a thing? It's 1995 is when it was created.
Okay.
That makes sense.
That is correct.
Yeah.
First Pokemon game came out in 1996 with Pokemon Red and Blue.
I played Blue. That was my version.
Yep.
My sister played Red. She was way better than me, like times a bazillion.
I think she still plays the Pokemon.
I think she does. Shout out to my family. Hey, family. We get a lot of shout outs on this show.
So how did you end up where you are?
Yeah, what's your degree? This is the new thing we've been asking people is your degree relevant to what you're doing now?
I would say it is. My degree's in political science, and I have a minor in communication studies. And I fully thought I would be working in politics. I'd be in Washington or at a political consulting firm or doing campaign something more immediately related to politics. But in admissions, I'm applying many of the same skills, many of the same tools to the cycle of a campaign, reaching out to students, and working toward really the same sort of social justice and college access goals. You know, it's definitely a public interest job.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really is closely related to what I what I studied and just tackling it from a different angle, and one that I think is a little more satisfying as far as seeing the outcome of the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree.
I think you're part of the minority in that, though. A lot of people have been saying, like, no, my degree is not related to my higher education work, which isn't
bad. I didn't expect it to lead this way, but it makes sense to me.
Right. It still works.
Well, even my biology degree makes sense to me for what I do. I mean, with the understanding of numbers, statistics, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's relevant. It's just not, you know, I didn't graduate in public relations or anything like that. But, you know, I think I've picked up quite a bit along the way, and I still am all the time. So it's fun. I mean,
at a liberal arts college, we're selling students on this idea that you can study something that's interesting to you, and you're going to develop skills that will translate to whatever career you choose. And so, you know, you can't major in admissions, and you can't major in a lot of things that are going to be jobs in the next 10, 20 years. So, while I didn't go to a liberal arts college, I think I tackled my education in a way that, you know, that has left me able to, you know, be a part of something other than working on a political campaign.
Awesome. So we're like 20 minutes into this. We haven't gone off topic once.
I know. I'm like,
I just want to make, I just want to make note of that.
I haven't talked about my cat, even though she like, she just did something very weird and I like got distracted. She normally just jumps onto my bed, but for some reason she chose to like sneak behind my side table next to my bed and like do a pull up onto the bed just on the corner. So I was like, what are you doing? Like, hi, welcome.
I always find it funny that we talk about
for a year.
I know, right? I find it so funny that we talk about Jackie's cat like 50 times more than we talk about my 7 cats. So
and yeah, Sam Logan has about 50 times more cats than me.
Or 7.
We haven't talked about my 3 at all.
You have 3 cats?
I do.
So between us we have 11 cats.
That's correct. Between us we have 11 cats.
Between the 3 of us.
That's too many.
That's concerning.
It's not quite hoarder level.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, Logan.
Individually,
we're not at hoarder level. But if you put us all together, I think once you have more than 10 cats, you're probably a cat hoarder.
I just don't know, Logan, how you don't get like overwhelmed by the number of cats. Because like I get overwhelmed by having one cat. Like I'm sitting on my laptop and she's like, hello, I would like to sit on this thing that you're using. And like tonight I was doing a workout and she would not like leave me. Like I was doing mostly yoga based things, so every time I was like planking or in downward dog, she's like, oh, I see your hands, can I like lay on you or like rub my face against you? Like I don't know how you don't get overwhelmed.
I find that when you have more than one cat, they tend to play with the other cat more, thus showing the other cat more attention than you, if that makes sense. The other thing too is that I guess my cats aren't that clingy, except like when it's like food time, when it's time to eat, then, yes, you know, then they want to eat. And then only about, you know, 3 or 4 of them come to eat and then they like take shifts on eating. So,
because you cats to have shifts.
It's very rare that I ever see all of them together, like in one place. They never are all in one place. So, I mean, my house isn't huge, but it's big enough to where, like, I'm in a room and there's not a cat in here. And I can go in the outside room and there might be, like, one, like, sitting on a couch, but it's not too crazy.
Yeah, we're in a one-bedroom apartment, so the 3 are always very present.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. I'm also in a one bedroom, but I can understand where that would happen. She like follows me around a lot or just sits on everything that I need. Just so obnoxious.
Yes. Well, your cat also probably didn't grow up, you know, with electronic devices around and all that kind of stuff.
No. And I think actually, cause I'm not her first owner. I think, her other living spaces, she's had multiple floors. Like I'm in a one bedroom, one floor, you know, apartment. I think that she's kind of like, I'm bored now.
Right. Well, that makes sense. So have you seen Star Wars yet? have to ask that question.
What did you say?
Has he seen Star Wars yet?
I have.
All right, I'll just sit over here.
Have you not?
No, I've seen one Star Wars movie in my life. I don't understand references, so I'm just going to like sit. Four.
Okay, that's if you're going to see one.
Yes, yeah, because I was with people that like advised me on what to see. And so I watched that one. But yeah, Logan is just going to...
No, out. I was just curious. I just take a nap. We don't have to talk
about it. I do think we've just crossed the line into openly talking about it is okay.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think there's been enough time now that, like, if someone hasn't seen it that's, like, dying to see it, it's like, all right, well, it's been a while.
I mean, once it's made $800 million, I mean, it's, you know, it should be fine.
Yeah, it's...
I think, actually, what is it at now?
It was a billion in a week or so, wasn't it? I mean, it was...
It just crossed. It hadn't opened in China yet. It hasn't. It's $1.7 billion worldwide. Wow. It's the number five movie. In the U.S. of all time since 1977, inflation adjusted. Yeah, it's pretty big. It's number three. Yeah. It's number three worldwide all time. So it just passed Jurassic World. So now it's at, 1.7 billion. But it still has another billion to go before it beats Avatar.
I'm so excited to tell my children about the the things that I've lived through. Like, I lived through Avatar and Star Wars, like all these like high-grossing movies. Yep, I was there.
Maybe it's because I'm more of a Star Wars fan, but I actually like Star Wars more than I liked Avatar.
But no, I think that's just a general.
Avatar, so, no spoilers, please.
Avatar, you definitely missed the boat on that one. I saw Avatar. I thought the graphic work was beautiful. I appreciated it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was like the best movie of all time. Now that I can't like name what I think the best movie of all time is, I don't know.
I don't even remember the name of the main
style
character
of movie.
Yeah,
like plot wise.
Yeah, you seem more like a Dark Knight Rises kind of person.
Me?
Dark Knight, you know?
No, I'm Batman. Like dumb humor. Like, I don't want to.
I was
think
kidding.
When I watch a movie, like,
oh, so like Dumb and Dumber. That was a great movie for you, probably. Like,
as much as I don't really appreciate, or as much as I kind of appreciate, like, action movies or, like, crime type, you know, thriller movies, I just like to go sit. I don't want to think. You know, like, rom-coms, totally
yes.
my thing.
What's Absolutely. Your favorite rom-com?
Serendipity.
I've never seen that one.
It's fantastic. It's John Cusack at his most John Cusack.
Yeah.
So watch it.
It's a pretty good movie.
And it's one of those movies that masquerades as a Christmas movie if you want it to. So I know we're now 11 months out, but it's a good it's Christmas funny. Movie without being a Christmas movie.
We can do Christmas in July. I'll watch it in the summer.
10 Things I Hate About You probably would have to be
That's a good rom-com.
My favorite coming-of-age rom-com movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's just, it's so like 90s. Like,
yes.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. It was good. It's not my favorite rom-com.
I don't know.
I, for some reason, distinctly remember the movie Valentine's Day. It wasn't really that good, but it had like a bunch of, you know, all the names in it kind of thing. And they did one of those things where the cast is really big, and then, you know, this one's the cousin of that one, and that one's the ex-boyfriend of, you know, this girl, and so they all connect at the end. It was kind of like, oh
yeah,
so it's kind of cute. But yeah, I don't like to think when I watch movies or TV shows, even though I was binge watching Scandal on Netflix, and that was just like too much emotion.
Yeah, I've started watching like two new shows because, you know, I'm nerdy. They're nerdy shows. They're The Expanse on Sci-Fi Channel.
What's that about?
I haven't figured it out yet, but it's a It's definitely a very complicated space opera.
Let's go back and define the phrase space opera.
Okay.
Please.
So a space opera, right, is like a soap opera, like a drama that just happens to take place in space. Okay. Star Wars is also a space drama. So what separates those two kinds of movies from like really pure sci-fi like Star Trek is Star Trek, like, science is the answer to everything and technology is the answer to everything, and it's like a major plot device, right? So in other words, you know, you have to have the warp drive and you have to be able to explain what the warp drive does in order to, you know, make one thing move to another, like plot-wise. Where in Star Wars, you could take it and throw it in the Wild West and take it completely out of space, and it would still totally make sense.
Exactly. Star Wars is about politics and people, and it's just a story that could be anywhere. It happens to be in space.
And it's a drama, and it just happens to be in space. In fact, it was inspired by Westerns and kind of Japanese kind of storytelling and stuff. So there's that. And the same goes with The Expanse. The Expanse just kind of happens in space. It's more drama. Battlestar Galactica, same thing. Politics, you know, drama, romance, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it just happens to take place on a spaceship. So it's interesting in that sense. And that's what makes it really like viewable in a lot of different ways, you know, like for a lot of different people. Can mean a lot of different things, at least. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes a space opera, as opposed to just pure sci-fi.
I just learned something. That was really fun.
I am a little disappointed that a space opera is not an opera in space.
In space, right. That's why I was a little confused.
That's what The Fifth Element has. If you've ever seen that movie, there's actually a space opera in it.
I have not.
No.
Wow. No multi-pass for you guys. If you have seen it, you probably just got that joke. But if not, then wow.
Majority rules.
Yep.
Sorry. All right, that was a nice tangent. So, James, is there anything cool happening at work? What's up?
Lots of cool things happening at work. We're really in the middle of reading season right now. And just, you know, just holed up in my office. Going through applications, but this is our first year at Trinity being test optional, which has been awesome. We dropped our requirement for SATs and ACTs and have seen a lot of really strong, really exciting applicants who probably would have been kept away by the requirement to submit test scores in the past, which, you know, research is pretty clear. It is a reflection of socioeconomic status more than it is a reflection of, you know, a student's promise to, you know, how well they'll do in college. So we've really been excited by that, and it's something that, you know, is definitely new to Trinity, although not, you know, not new in higher ed, but
right.
Something we've really enjoyed kind of seeing that shift at Trinity.
So I would assume, with, you know, minimal admissions knowledge, I would assume that you have a significant increase in the number of applications you've received because of this.
It's hard to say at this point. It looks like a slight increase, and part of that is because we announced we were going test optional. Mm-hmm. Really, when students had already put their list together, it was early October that we made the decision. So it wasn't a big spike in applications. I've heard a lot of critiques too of the test optional movement and test optional policies as being a tool to increase application numbers. Heard someone Bill Hiss. He's from Bates and was one of the godfather of the test optional movement. And he said at the NACAC conference in October, test optional is not about making us look better, but it's about making us better. And you're able to get really exciting applicants who are going to do very well, who may have been kept away by by the standardized test requirements. And so we're thrilled to be test optional now and to have some of these students on their way to Trinity. And some, you know, a good number who through early decision are coming to Trinity as our first non-submitting students. And it's definitely an exciting time.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're allowed to like give away all the secrets, but this whole grading thing and like reading applications is something that I don't fully understand. So if I am a student that did take the SAT and I submit my like really great score to you, does that like, how does that affect me? Does that like, is that like a good thing or is it kind of just like, well, that's nice, but you know,
it
doesn't.
No, that's great. It definitely helps. And on the other side of the coin, if the student submits scores and they're not strong, that's going to hurt them.
That's exciting. I'm excited to hear how, let's say, catch back up with you, how, you know, the whole process has gone kind of in your first year after becoming test optional, since you guys are right in the middle of reading.
Right.
Do you guys have like rolling admission or do you have like early decision?
We have two rounds of early decision and regular decision, which we don't have rolling admission. Most of our decisions will be announced end of March.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Ours.
So we do it all at once.
Ours is rolling. I always find it interesting how many different ways schools do things. But it all comes down to May 1st.
Exactly. It does. and it must be, you know, it's tough for school counselors in particular who are working with students and to keep all those different standards straight. And I know it's, you know, they're doing incredible work, but it's just really, really, you know, we don't always make it easy on them.
Yep.
Kind of generally in higher ed, all of us.
Indeed. Indeed it does.
Hmm.
Well, I think
the class
we're
2020. I just thought about that.
Yeah, I know. Right. The class of 2020. Yeah.
That's
when I made that Facebook group, I was like, okay, well, I've been here a while.
It's so scary. I can't believe it.
Why is it scary for you?
I just think like that just feels like so far away, but like knowing that we're accepting that class means that it's really not that far away.
Yeah, 4 years is still a while.
I've been seeing birth dates on some of these applications.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. 97, 98.
I mean, that's even scary for me. I know that I'm younger, but like seeing those years, it's like, wow, I was like a cognizant like human being at that point in my life. And you were.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I was like graduating high school.
Mm-hmm. Pokemon is older than many of these students.
I know. Well, there's a whole like, I'm sure there's a BuzzFeed article. I think it's a BuzzFeed article. It's got to be about like things about, you know, the incoming class and like things
actually,
that they don't know
exist. Actually, I think a school
exist.
Does that. I forgot what school is though.
Well, no, it was like, it was more of like, I won't say a mockery, but it was like things that they don't understand because they weren't there. So like the save icon on, you know, Microsoft Office is always the floppy disk. And, you know, these students don't know what that is, like they've never used one, or like using T9 Word, or like not having unlimited text messages. Like those are things that you don't like. I remember it was like, oh, I only have this many texts that I can send a month, and that was it. And that's not a thing for these students anymore.
And it's Beloit College, and it's called the Mindset List.
That's right. Yeah.
Essentially it's a list of things that the students will never know because they were born they weren't alive during their lifetimes. Like for the 2019 class, just a couple things. Princess Diana, the notorious B.I.G., Jacques Cousteau, Mother Teresa, all gone before they were born. So there's a lot of cool stuff. We'll link to it in the story at the end.
Well, welcome to the class of 2020.
Yeah, they haven't made that list yet, but
it'll be even more alarming
for
us 30-somethings.
I know, right?
Sorry, I'm not there yet.
Oh, you'll make it.
Eventually.
I'll get there soon. In 6 years, I'll be there.
And we'll be at, like, episode...
We're going to have a show in 6 years.
I think
we'll lose all of our listeners by then.
Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
So that's all the time we have for today's show.
So
thanks, James, for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me, my pleasure.
It's great having you. Head down to highered.social and get links to the things we talked about today, including the mindset list for the class of 2019. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher if you haven't already. And if you could, give us a rating, give us some stars, write a review. We'd love to hear from you, see what you think of the show. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet, be on the show. Just like James, he tweeted us saying he wanted to be on. So we will definitely let you do that. We will make it happen. So thanks again for joining us this week.
Thank you. Bye. Hi, Jackie's mom.
I'm sure she says hi.
See you later.